Boy, am I excited about our scripture tonight. Genesis chapter 32. It opened your Bible. I'm going to read about half of it now and probably the other half during the sermon anyway. But I want us tonight to look into the story of Jacob wrestling with God. I've enjoyed looking and thinking about this story. And I have a lot of questions about the wrestling match, and maybe you got some answers. I don't know, but I want to give you an opportunity tonight, too, to wrestle with this story and to wrestle with what was going on in this story. I'll probably get carried away anyway, but at least at the end, I want to give you an opportunity to say, what in this story gets your attention? What is it about this story that you believe God speaks to you about? You know, I stand up here and I just kind of pour it out to you. You know, I just give you a truckload of stuff, you know. But what's most important, every time you come to this place, is that you're saying, God, what do you want to say to me about? And I just want to remind me of that and you of that, that having your Bible open or not having it open, but listening to what God says is so important, that God speaks to you and speaks to me. And in some of these stories, God might speak to you about something that He won't speak to me about, and vice versa. But this is a great story, and I want to invite you to get into this story tonight and think about what it means to wrestle with God. I'm guessing that all of us, at times, in some way or another, wrestle with God. Maybe symbolically, figuratively, but I want to ask you tonight to think about what does it mean in your life and my life, but for you, for your life, to wrestle with God. This is an interesting story. It's an amazing story. It's a little piece of Jacob's life, but an important piece of his life as Jacob is searching for help. He's searching to know God. He's searching to hear from God. The story of wrestling is obviously for Jacob intertwined with a significant time in Jacob's life where he has left his father-in-law's house, Laban, and he has finally gotten away from Laban, who has held on to him for at least 20 years, and four wives later, 11 daughters and a son. He finally is able to get away from Laban, and Jacob has this thing within him that's calling him back to the land that he came from, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And all this makes this an important moment in Jacob's life. And then you add to that that Jacob is also in this chapter coming to terms with his brother Esau. And 20 years after the event of at least 20 years and maybe much long after that 20-year time period, Jacob is finally coming to the place where he knows he needs to face his past. He needs to face Esau. And so part of his journey back to the land of promise, to the land of the covenant, it really goes through his encounter with Esau and coming to terms with that. What would happen to him? Would Esau still be angry? Would Esau still be vengeful? Would he still have in his heart the desire to carry out his threat that he made 20-plus years ago to kill Jacob? But I believe that Jacob somehow knew that it was time to go back and to face Esau. I thought of the recent Christian movie out, Facing the Giants. And some of you probably have seen that, but it's a whole different kind of giant that Jacob faced. But you know, sometimes there just seems like there's giants in our lives. Sometimes it's because of our past. Maybe because in the past we've really messed up. And years later, we have to come to terms with that. Sometimes it means restitution. Sometimes it can mean forgiveness. Sometimes it can mean accepting forgiveness. Well, I think all these things are a part of what Jacob is wrestling with God about. And at least those are things that are on my mind as I look in this story. He had finished 20 years with Laban, and then you add to that a couple other things. God had told him to return to the place of the covenant. After 20 years, God, when he saw the tensions with Laban, and we looked at that story last week, and I won't go back into that story, but just to say that God
also came to the place to say, Jacob, it's time for you to go back. It's time for you to go home. God was dealing with Jacob, and he said, Jacob, it's time to go home. It's time to go back. But even in the next story, the first thing that Jacob deals with as he goes back home is Esau. He knew he had to face Esau. You might say of Jacob, he knew he had to face his past in order to go past it and get beyond it. And sometimes there can be things in our past that we do need to deal with, and we need to deal with it so we can move beyond it. And it's one thing I see in the life of Jacob in this story. I think that's very good. Genesis chapter 32. I'm going to read the first six verses, and then I'm going to pick up at the story of the wrestling in verse 22, and actually probably going to read most of the other verses also. But hear the word of the Lord, Genesis chapter 32. I'm going to read the first six verses here. Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, this is the camp of God. So he named that place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, this is what you are to say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there until now. I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats and men servants and maid servants. Now I am sending this message to my Lord that I may find favor in your eyes. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Now go to verse 22. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives and his two maidservants and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? And Jacob answered, Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with man, and you have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip, was touched near the tendon. Wow, there's a lot in this story to think about. And so again tonight, what does God say to you in this story? All along this way and throughout Jacob's life are places and events and markers of God dealing with him. We've spent quite a few Sunday nights now looking into Jacob's life and looking, quite honestly, at his weak character and the deception especially that was so much a part of his life and his family for that matter. And there were times in Jacob's life and will be times in Jacob's life when somehow he seems to struggle with and come to the place of asking God, what is this about? Why? Who am I? What am I going to do? In chapter 8, there was the story in a place called Bethel. There was a dream, and in the dream, there were the angels ascending and descending into heaven, and we call it the story of the Jacob's ladder. And then after this event, Jacob knows that God has been dealing with him, and he names the place Bethel. This is the house of God. In this chapter, there's two more places that Jacob names, places that are significant. The first one in verse 1, Mahanaim, the camp of God. As this story begins to open up and Jacob heads south from Haran and heads away from his father-in-law Laban, it says that the angels of God met him. We know that God was somehow connected to Jacob in an amazing way. And it just seems like all along the journey, there are times when the angels of God just seem to come and minister to Jacob. We don't always know why. In fact, there's a lot more to the story, I'm sure, that may be recorded in Genesis chapter 32. In this chapter, in the beginning, you have this time when the angels come and Jacob calls this place Mahanaim. And then at the end of the chapter, Jacob says, I have seen the face of God and I'm still alive. And he names the place Peniel. Peniel becomes a significant event and time in Jacob's life as he has wrestled with God. He has looked God in the face. He has somehow come to terms with who God was and who he is. And I don't know exactly what that means, but it was significant. It was important. Jacob's relationship with God was unique. It was full of relationship. You know, all the things I've said about Jacob, there is one thing that seems so true to me is his life was full of relationship with God. Somehow Jacob, for all the things that we say about his character, had this relationship of seeking out and searching and wrestling with and struggling with God, it seems like to me. Jacob seems to find God at pivotal times in his life, and facing Esau is one of them. This is an important time in Jacob's life. There's several things that Jacob does as he comes to this point of wrestling with God and facing the giant in his life that are significant. The first thing that I noticed about Jacob, and it would certainly be something that we expect, is I see Jacob's fear. Jacob is afraid. Jacob knows that he's facing something that is very dangerous. He knows that he's facing his past. He is not forgotten, even after 20 years of what he had done to Esau. I'm supposing, but I don't know for sure, that Jacob is facing some guilt. I don't know about the guilt. The Bible really doesn't tell us about Jacob's guilt, but it does tell us that he was very much afraid. He was afraid that the consequences that happened, or the consequences from what he did 20 plus years ago, were going to come back, and they were going to come back very soon. What he had done to Esau, he knew it was wrong. He had to have known what was wrong when he did it, but he still did it. The deception of his father. He also knew how angry Esau was, how justified Esau would have been to be angry with him. He had talked about and threatened to kill him, so much so that their mother took Jacob aside and said, Jacob, you've got to get out of here. If you don't leave, Esau is going to find a time and a place and he's going to kill you. She had heard him say, my father Isaac is going to die soon, and when he does, then I will kill Jacob. Of course, Esau didn't know it, but maybe the providence of God, that God allowed Isaac to live another 100 years. So he lived a long time after that. Well, Jacob also probably knew that he deserved punishment from Esau. Perhaps he was thinking, whatever it takes, whatever I've done in my past, maybe Jacob had finally come to the place that he said, I have to face this. I have to face Esau. And it would seem from verse 2 that Jacob also had a knowledge of where Esau was. When I read this chapter and I look at the geography of these places on the map, Esau actually lives to the south, further south than where Jacob would have needed to come in order to pass back in to the land of where Isaac, his father, lived. But it looks, when you look at a map of these places, Peniel and all these that I mentioned and referred, and you put them on the map, Jacob seems to go out of his way to find Esau. When you look at where Esau lived in the land of Edom and the place that's named here in this chapter, it seems to me like Jacob knows that he must face Esau. Also, in verse 2, it says, when Jacob saw them, verse 3, Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So even it seems like Jacob is already ahead of time saying, I need to go and I need to face Esau. I need to go where Esau is. I need to talk to Esau. And we have to deal with what has happened in our past. Not only was Jacob afraid of Esau because what he had done, but then he finds out, as he sends these messengers to Esau, not knowing how he's going to react, he sends the messengers to go and find Esau. Apparently he knew where he lived, or he knew the area. Maybe there had been contact in the family. I don't know. Probably over 20 years there probably was, but But Jacob sends the messengers to Esau, and then he gets the message back. He sends his group down and finds Esau and tells Esau that Jacob wants to see you. And so what does Esau do? It appears that he gets a band of men together, 400 men, and he rides north. And everything at this point would seem to tell Jacob that Esau is coming to get him. Esau is going to come and take the vengeance on him that he promised 20 years ago. Esau rides toward him. Verse 6 says, "When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, 'We went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him.'" The potential for Jacob, at least, he knew that Esau was coming, and it could be quite a day of reckoning for Jacob. So what does Jacob do? I'm sure Jacob didn't know for sure. Was Esau's intentions to destroy him? He really didn't know. Had Esau held on to his anger? I mean, was today just about the same for Esau as it was 20 years ago when he left? Had Esau changed at all? Jacob doesn't know that. And so, what does Jacob do? Number one, Jacob prepares. We see this flurry of activity. We see him preparing for the worst. We see him thinking about, what are we going to do? What's going to happen? What if Esau comes to take vengeance on me? And so he's thinking about his contingency plans. He's cautious. He divides his family at this point into two groups. We don't know a lot about the content of the two groups, but he divides them. Maybe it was Leah and her maidservant and their sons, and Rachel and her maidservant and their sons. It would have been a larger and a smaller group. They're 8 and 3 at that point, but it could have been that, and divided them and men servants and animals. And basically Jacob says, well, if Esau's coming to get me, he's going to be able to destroy us. But if I divide into two groups, then maybe one of the groups will get away. And so he's very cautious. You look at verse 5 it says, "I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats and men servants and maidservants. Now I am sending this message to my Lord that I may find favor in your eyes." I also notice about in Jacob's preparation that his attitude toward Esau is one of humility. It seems obvious in the story that Jacob has an attitude toward Esau that is looking for reconciliation. He is not looking to justify his actions. It would appear that he's looking to say to Esau, "I have done wrong to you, and I'm coming to see you. Now I am sending this message to you, my Lord, that I may find favor in your eyes." Number one, the use of the word Lord, of course, that's not the same word that we use to describe God or describe Jesus, our Lord Jesus Christ. It was a title of respect. It was a title of saying, "I give deference to you." Jacob may have been saying, I'm actually giving deference to you because you're my older brother. And he's showing something that he never showed to Esau before. He's showing humility. He uses the term and he's saying, "Esau, I'm coming before you, and I'm coming to humble myself before you and to find favor in your eyes." It would seem from everything we read about Jacob in this story that he is wanting to be reconciled to Esau. He's not holding on to anything about he was right what he did or anything like that. When he hears that that Esau is on his way, 400 men, again, he's overtaken with fear, and you would expect that. He does what Jacob has always done. He's been a planner. He's been a strategizer. And so he doesn't know what to do, and so he divides into these two groups. And then he does something else. He sends this large gift on ahead to Esau. He divides everything he has, and then he takes a large number, and the numbers are in here, and I won't take time to go in, but he sends all these animals and all these gifts to Esau, and he sends it on ahead. He said, "Now take these to Esau and say, I'm bringing these to you, Esau, this large gift." Beginning in verse 13, we didn't read that part. Maybe I'll just mention a little part of it. It says, "He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau, 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys." I don't know what all Jacob had, but this is a large, large gift. Again, I don't know relative to what he had, but he gathers all this together and he says, "Take this to Esau." Perhaps this could be seen as a bribe, or it could be seen as, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, blood money. Maybe he was trying to say, pacify Esau. In fact, the verse, and I think in verse 18 is the word pacify and used there. And that may be a part. Maybe Jacob was just saying, hey, I'll do whatever it takes to make Esau happy. And that's possible as well. But I've also thought about Jacob here. Maybe it's interesting at least that maybe it's a way of undoing what he stole from Esau as well. I don't know how wealthy Esau was at this point, but Jacob sends him this large gift, and this gift could represent what Jacob had taken from Esau, and when he stole the birthright, and he stole the blessing, he bought the birthright, and he stole the blessing, and Jacob had taken some from Esau, and it included the blessing of his father Isaac, and included the wealth of the family. I mean, Jacob had a right to the wealth of the family of his father Isaac and his mother Rebekah. And maybe what Jacob was saying was, I've accumulated this, and now you're the one that should have had this, and I give this and I bring this to you, an undoing of the stolen blessing. I'm not sure about that, but I think it's possible. But then Jacob does something else that's far more significant and important in this story, and it tells us about who really Jacob was. It says that Jacob prays. And boy, did he pray. And in his prayer, he says some things that are pretty special, I believe. Jacob calls out to God. He calls out to the God of his father Abraham, the God of his father Isaac, and he calls out and says, God, I need you. I'm calling out to you. And really, Jacob's prayer itself is a beautiful prayer. You look at verse 9, it says, then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord, you said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. He says, first of all, to God, I know you told me to do this. I know that you called me to go back, and I'm going to do it, and I'm doing it, but I want you to know I'm doing it because you called me to do this, and you told me to do this. And then Jacob very quickly shows a certain relationship with God. I think that's very precious here. Number one, he shows a sign of humility. As he did when he sent the message to his brother Esau, he's also showing to God in this prayer a certain humility. He says in verse 10, I am unworthy of all your kindness and faithfulness that you have shown your servant, Jacob. And I believe this is from Jacob's heart. And he says to God, God, I don't deserve what you've done for me. I don't deserve your grace. I don't deserve your mercy. I don't deserve your favor. God, you know that. I know that. He says to God, I'm not asking you to help me because I'm good enough. I'm not trying to ask you to help me because I have earned my way to you, or I have earned your favor. Jacob does the right thing here. And everything we say about Saul this morning, it's just the opposite of Saul's attitude and Saul's heart. Instead, Jacob says in these short words, and I know it's not a whole lot, but I am unworthy is the attitude that Jacob has to God. I am unworthy. I think what a good example that is of us and how we should pray. And how we should seek God and wrestle with God and search out for God. I am unworthy. He acknowledges that unworthiness. He also acknowledges in his prayer, he understands that God has made a promise to him and he's a part of the covenant, and he understands that God has laid himself out in this covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and that's heavy for Jacob. He knows that. He knows that God knows who he is. God knows what he has done, and God has still said, I want to bless you, and I want to guide you, and I want to give you descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And I'm sure Jacob's thinking about that. God, you made this covenant with me. I'm not really sure why. I'm not worthy of this. But in this prayer, he recognizes that, and he says, God, you have done this. He almost reminds God, God, you chose me. You said that you would take care of me. And then Jacob asked God for help. He asked God for help. I mean, you think, well, what's good about Jacob's character? Here's another one. Here's a good one. He did exactly what we're supposed to do when we have a need. We come before God and we petition Him. Say, God, I need your help. And he does it. He even does it in a way that I think is very beautiful. Verse 11 says, save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I'm afraid he will come and attack me. He knew he was needy. He knew he had a problem. He knew he was unworthy, but he also had a great faith in who God was and that God could protect him. And I think I finally come in my mind and my heart to the bottom line of why Jacob was so great. He was a man of faith. Poor character, but faith. He did some dumb things, but he had an understanding of God, and he came to God. And he said, God, you can do it. I put my trust in you. You alone are worthy of the kind of faith and trust that I am going to give to you. Jacob had an amazing faith when he prays to God for help. How does God respond to that? How does God respond to this prayer of Jacob? Well, he sends a wrestler. I don't know what to make of it. How's God respond to the faith? I mean, God will respond how he will. We might just not know what God's going to do. But I'll tell you what he did for Jacob. In the middle of the night, when all his family was out there, and he sent them away, and he came back across the river, I get the impression that he's alone. He wants to be alone. He prays and says, God, I'm unworthy of your help. But I know you made a promise to me, and I'm asking you today, would you help me? What does God do? He sends somebody. I don't know who it is or what it is. It says a man. Another translation says an angel. Another translation says God. So I'm not sure exactly who it is that came and wrestled with Jacob. I've always thought it in terms of an angel. This is a mysteriously incredible story of what happens. Far more questions than answers. You know, I said I had some questions about Jacob and Esau and what they would do, but what is this wrestling match about? Who is Jacob wrestling with? What does it mean? Why? All night? You know, wrestling is a 3-minute, 3-round sport for the most part, you know? If you watch college wrestling, and, you know, 3 minutes, rounds up, plus somebody's pinned, you have 3 more, and then you have 3 more, and it's over. And then when you get... Well, Brad, I better not be speaking too much. Brad, maybe it's 2 minutes, I'm not sure. But it's real short. But boy, it's intense. And they're probably half exhausted when they wrestle for a total of 6 or 9 minutes. They give it all they got. But this is something different. This is all night. This is spiritual. This is Jacob somehow wrestling with God. Somehow seeking something from God. Saying, God, I need you. I want you. I'm calling out to you all night long. This wrestling match. And then as the night comes to an end and whoever this being is, an angel or whatever, the angel says, okay, this is enough. I mean, when the angel says it's enough, you think, boy, it must have been pretty intense. You would think Jacob had to have been so exhausted and dead, you know. I don't know what the wrestling meant. I don't know. I mean, we have a physical thing in mind, but maybe it wasn't that at all. I'm not sure what it was. But whatever it is, whatever it was, you have this angel saying to Jacob as dawn is coming, Jacob, that's it. That's enough. But Jacob says, no, it's not enough. I want more. I want to understand God. I want to understand. And so what does the angel do? He smacks Jacob in the hip. We have this story and tradition in Jewish, this fun Jewish, and I didn't take time to tell the story of the Jews' theology about the hip socket and all this stuff, but it's really kind of fun and interesting. He smacks Jacob in the hip, and so Jacob, So what does Jacob do? He still doesn't give up. He grabs on. No, you can't leave. You can't leave. Hold on. Bless me, he says. Bless me. What is that blessing about? Jacob is crying out something. I'm not sure what, but he's crying out to God for something. That's amazing. Jacob is seeking God. He's seeking God's presence. He's seeking God's favor. He's seeking God's blessing. Maybe you'd say Jacob has struggled his whole life to really come to terms with who God is and the covenant of Abraham and Isaac. So what does the angel, the messenger, do? The man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." So what does the angel say? "I'm changing your name, Jacob. You're not going to be the deceiver anymore." Well, that's what Jacob meant, deceiver. Well, that's good. He changes his name to Israel. Israel becomes the name for God's people. The rest of the Old Testament, and figuratively in the New Testament, he becomes the name of God's people. "I have wrestled with God and with man, and I have overcome. Your name will be Israel." Boy, that's just a lot to think about right there. "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob is seeking something, and the angel of God recognizes it. Says, "Jacob, yeah, of all your faults, Jacob, you really get it. You really get that passionate desire to be connected to God." So his name is changed, and he becomes that name associated, and the father of the Israelite people. His 12 sons, 11, and the 12th will be born somewhere on this trip. Not sure exactly where it fits in, but somewhere along the trip, the 12th son is born. And then they become the tribes of Israel. He struggles through life. His struggle is, you might say of Jacob's struggle, his struggle is pleasing to God. And I just think when I think about that part, maybe that's why God approved of Jacob so much. Maybe that's why God chose him, because he struggled. And he kept fighting. And he kept fighting. And I just think, when I think about that, I think there's a message there for us. Don't give up. Don't give up. If you have questions about God, you have questions about life, you have questions about the Bible, you have questions about church, you have questions about the body of Christ, you're wrestling with spiritual things, don't give up. Keep wrestling with God. Keep saying, "God, I need your help. I need you to show me the way. I need you to show me what to do about Esau. I need you to show me what to do about the Esau in my life." Whatever it is we face, whatever the struggle, whatever the problem, this story just reminds me that the struggle is okay. I have often said to people, especially people that are grieving, people in a funeral, it's okay to struggle. It's okay to question God. It's okay to say to God, "I don't understand." God's big enough to bear it, and He can wrestle with you all night. He can help you to work through your deepest questions. God likes that. God rewards that. It seems like there's something about this struggle and this wrestling match that just strikes me. God was very pleased with Jacob. Maybe that should tell us that the struggle is okay. We can wrestle with God. We can have questions. We can seek Him. We can keep coming at it, maybe for 20 years, maybe a lot longer. Jacob, I think, in the end, had an amazing faith. Described his fear, described his preparation, described his prayer. But the last thing that I want to say about Jacob, and I mentioned it already, is I believe Jacob had an amazing faith. He might have had a weak character, and he did at times, but he had an amazing faith, and God rewarded him. God changed his name. God said, "Yeah, Jacob, yeah." Verse 30. "So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, 'It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared.' The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip." He had something to remember that time and that moment, the struggle with God.